anticipating what is he going to do. I remember Dan Allen used to always do that kind of stuff. He would have different stuff or have us get in groups and discuss stuff. I didn't like the group part, but anyway. So, but I also was reminded this morning when John stood up to talk about Psalm 145 that I did a visual demonstration to the Awana group years ago, and some of these kids might have been part of that, but it was a visual demonstration that didn't go over very well. And so the verse I was focusing on was the fact that God's greatness is unsearchable. And so I thought, I'm going to show these kids, the lesson was on that verse, and so I was going to show them that God's greatness is unsearchable. No matter how far and wide you look for it, you'll never be able to come to the end of his greatness. And so I got a $100 bill, and I was going to actually part with it if they were to find it. But I got a $100 bill, and I hid it in one of the three classrooms down at the old school building. And I picked the first grade classroom, and I found an aerosol can, and I put the $100 bill in the lid of the aerosol can and closed the aerosol can and put it in the closet in the first grade teacher's closet. And so I told the kids, there's a $100 bill somewhere in one of these three classrooms, and if you find it, you can have it. And they went through there tearing through all the classrooms. And then time was up, and they didn't find it. And so I took them over, and I opened the lid and showed them where it was, and they about lynched me because they were like, that's impossible. We can't find that. I'm like, well, that was the point of the lesson. And so then I was supposed to be teaching after that point, and I don't think any of them listened to me after that because they were so ticked that I had hid it in such a ridiculous place. So last week, Daryl talked about the different ratings of messages, and if you weren't there, he talked about some messages are G, some are PG, some are PG-13, some are R. I think he said his last week was a rated R message, and I think this week is another rated R message, so sorry for doing two rated R messages in a row, but basically, I've been thinking about some things lately the Lord has put on my heart. And I'll reiterate what Daryl said last week, is that basically this morning I'm just going to be talking to you about what the Lord has been putting on my mind. And I obviously am not there. I'm not saying this stuff because I have made it or that I do all the things that I'm going to talk about. It's just something that the Lord has put in my mind, and so I'm going to talk about it in front of all of you. The question I was asking myself is, am I a disciple the way Jesus defines being a disciple of his when he was here on earth? And another thing, I have to do all these disclaimers before I get into this, but some of the stuff that I'm going to talk about this morning, I understand that it was specifically for those disciples at that specific time, but in general, I think that some of the stuff that he said to them specifically, a lot of it is good for all time. But I do understand that some of the things were specific for a specific mission. But when Jesus was here and he was gaining his followers, he spent time teaching and gathering followers that would follow him and that would be his disciples. And if we were to look at his methods that he used back then, in our culture today, we would say that He tried to do that in a very ridiculous way, because if we had someone today trying to recruit people to go on a mission the way he did back then, he doesn't follow the marketing plans that you would find and taught in many of the colleges. I was looking at military recruitment posters the other day online, that had been used in the past. And, you know, I had pictures of different things. And one of them said, "Does your future look as exciting as ours? Be all that you can be." There's another one that said, "Action and adventure, enlist in the field artillery, U.S. Army." Another one, the famous one of Uncle Sam pointing and says, "I want you for the U.S. Army." And then there's another one of a woman wearing a fighter pilot helmet. And it said, "What some of the most successful women are wearing this year." All those posters were, they didn't go and talk about, I've never been in the military, but I'm assuming that it's a very, not a very fun thing. And there are a lot of things that aren't very pleasant about it, but they didn't mention any of those things in the poster. They only mentioned all the good stuff that was going to happen if you join the military. Because if they had mentioned the bad stuff, the numbers of people that would run and join the military would probably be very few. As most of you know, I have been selling real estate and insurance for about the past 3 or 4 years. And I was thinking that when I got those jobs, the recruiter, the people that were trying to get me to take those jobs, again, the same way the military was doing, they casted the job in a very positive light. They only said the good things that could be obtained by doing those jobs. I remember when I started real estate, there was an older man who owned the company, and he's a very nice man. I like him a lot. But I would go to sales, I would go to training meetings every Monday morning over off of Big Bend, and he would pump us up and train us on how to go out and get business. He wasn't training us on the details of the contract or all that kind of stuff. He was training us about how to go out and obtain customers. And I remember the very first meeting I went to, he went around a group of like 20 people and said, asked us the question, "Why do you want to be a real estate agent?" I remember people were giving answers like, "Oh, I like to work with people. And I like to see the joy that comes across the person's face when they finally sign that contract and get their first house. I really like working with people, and I like to see their happiness." And I remember what I said. My answer was something like that. But I could tell as we were going around that he didn't like any of those answers. And then finally one guy said, "I want to make a lot of money." And that was the answer that that Norm, the owner of the company, was looking for. He said, "You need to be in this business because you want to make a lot of money." And so he spent the next few weeks training us on how to make a lot of money in real estate. He talked about doing open houses. For those of you who don't know this, when a real estate agent does an open house to sell your house, he's not really doing it to sell your house. He's doing it so that people will come into the house that are looking for a house and he can possibly get more customers. That's the point of doing an open house. He would train us how to do that. He told us how to do things before open houses. He was my teacher. He was teaching me how to go out and make money. He would teach us things to do before open houses. He would teach us how to go to someone who had the for sale by owner sign in their yard and what to say to them, how to get into their house, how to talk to them once you get into their house, what to do after you visited their house to get their business so that they will let you sell their house. He told us how to work expired listings. People have their house for sale and it doesn't sell, and there's a list that comes out every day of people's houses that the contract has expired. You can go to their house, knock on their door, and try to get their business and see if they'll let you sell their house. He told us the Ford program. If any of you have ever been in sales, and you might have experienced this from a real estate agent, even though I decided I wasn't going to do this particular one. You're supposed to call people or have them out to lunch and talk to them, ask them about their family, ask them about their occupation, ask them about what they like to do for recreation, and then talk to them about their desires in life. And it's a way to get to know people, but the real goal here is my teacher was teaching me that that's how you get business, is that you have to talk to people about stuff, and then through the conversation you can ask them if they know anyone that is looking to buy or sell a house. And then we had a class on how to sell through serving, which is a unique method, but it was basically being a nice person and trying to get business by being a servant to others. I also had an insurance teacher. I was a disciple of an insurance boss, and I still am. He taught me that in order to sell a lot of insurance, I had to talk to a certain number of people each day. I had to stop by 20 churches a day and hand out information and talk to them. I was just given a book to read by my teacher, my insurance teacher, called Sell Naked in Bed. And that method was that you can sell from anywhere on the telephone. And so now, with my insurance job, I have to make 100 phone calls a day to churches, nonprofit organizations, or whatever. My teacher has told me that I need to do that, and I do that. I don't like doing that, but I do that. I also was taught by my teacher to learn personality types when selling. So if I'm going out to a church in rural Missouri, and the pastor is going to show up wearing overalls, and he is a laid-back kind of a guy, then I need to not go out there wearing a three-piece vested suit and try to sell him insurance. I need to be kind of fit his personality while I'm talking to him. In both situations, I had teachers that have been successful at what they're doing and that were telling me ways to do these things and ways to be successful at them. And I have picked the different things that I thought were useful and helpful along the way to help me get business. I don't do all of these things that I just talked about here for the two things that I do. But they taught me ways to have success in doing what I was doing. In the insurance position I had, I could be fired if I don't do the things that I've been told to do and if I don't keep up with my sales goals. But in real estate, it's more flexible. I have an office there, I have my license, and I go and I do what I need to do there. There have been periods of time where I was ashamed and fearful of running into my teacher, real estate teacher, and my insurance teacher. There have been times when I have had slow times in real estate and I pull up to the office and I see that my boss from the Big Bend office is over here at Butler Hill. I see his Mercedes-Benz sitting out there and I'm like, oh, good grief. And so I go in there and I kind of slink around because I know he's going to come up and ask me how things are going. And he's going to ask me if I'm doing the activities that he's taught me in order to generate more business. And there are also times when I can't wait to see him, to see those two people. Anyway, there are times when I don't want to see them, and there are times when I can't wait to see them. One of the things that, as I was looking at discipleship and the way that Jesus tried to get people to follow him, was that, and what I was just talking about here, is that when people are trying to gain followers for a job or for a movement or whatever, they very rarely talk about the bad stuff that can happen if you were to take this job or if you were to follow them and to become a part of this movement that they're trying to lead. When I took these two jobs, I probably would have been a little bit more hesitant about taking them had I been told, if I had looked on Craigslist or wherever, Indeed.com, looking for the job, and it said, "Do you want people to shout at you? Come sign up to be a real estate agent." I was doing an activity one day where I go around to expired listings. I go and knock on their door. I have information. And I knocked on this one door, and 99% of the time, most people are fine. This guy opened the door, and he was friendly when he first opened the door, because he thought I was just some guy. And then I said, "Hi, I'm David with Coldwell Banker Premier." And he said, "Get out of my yard." And then he said some other stuff, and I left. But if that had been on an advertisement for that job, I probably wouldn't have taken it. Come be a real estate agent if you want to be sued. The very first house that I ever sold, this hasn't happened since, so don't be afraid if you need me to do some business for you, but I was sued. It didn't end up going to court, but I was sued the very first house that I sold 4 years ago. It's a long story, but Coldwell Banker paid half of it, and then I had to pay the other half of about $4,000 because of trying to sell an older lady's house that she thought she owned, and she ended up not being the owner of the house. It was her parents' house, and she hadn't done the legal paperwork to make it so that she could sell it. Come do this job if you want a dog to urinate on you. One day while I was going around trying to get business for real estate, I knocked on a door and I was handing out flyers, and a dog came out and potted on me while I was talking to the lady. Come get this job if you want to be rejected way more than you are accepted. Like I said, I contact hundreds of people a week for real estate and insurance, and am rejected by way more than I'm accepted by. And lastly, both jobs are, if you look at list of most despised professions, both of those jobs make the list, no matter what list you look at. So come do this job if you want to be considered a schmuck and whatever. A book I have been reading lately has kind of made me start thinking about some of these concepts about being a disciple and what it means to be a disciple. And it's interesting how you can look at life and the things that you do in life and kind of see the church kind of in your life. Just like I've been taking the concept of Jesus getting disciples and relating it to the jobs that I have. I was thinking the other day, you can see kind of the church in action. Just if you were to walk into Coldwell Banker over here off of Butler Hill and just sit there for a couple hours, you can kind of see the church in action over there. Everybody has their license. Everybody that sits in there, they have taken the test. And they have paid the money, and they have their insurance license. But not all of them follow their teacher's teaching. Not all of them are that concerned about what their teacher has told them to do. But they all have their license. They all are real estate agents. I was sitting there the other day working, and I heard this other guy sitting across the way talking to some people. And he said, "Yeah, I've been doing this for 4 months, and I haven't made any money yet." And later on, I got up and walked to go to the bathroom or something. I walked by his desk, and he's sitting there on Facebook. And he's, anyway. And then you've got the person, you've got the people that they've been taught by the teacher, and they have all the appearance of being successful, but they probably aren't as successful as their appearance makes them look to be. Then you have the guy that goes above and beyond and takes what the teacher has taught them, and he even does it 10 times what the teacher's asked him to do. There's one young guy who was told, he took the open house theory, and he does open houses for anyone and everyone any day of the week. I don't know how successful he's been at it, but he made it known that he'll go and sit in an open house on Tuesday afternoon if he has to. So you have those people as well. So the question is, again, I'm talking to myself here, and these are just the things that I've been thinking lately. And am I a disciple in the true sense of the word? And am I making disciples the way that Jesus told me to? A lot of well-meaning Christians have taken a central concept to what Jesus was all about and what much of the Gospels was all about. And we have kind of reworded it and dumbed it down to fit into our culture, I think. Like I said earlier, if Jesus were to come today, or if his techniques for gaining new followers, if they were used today in America, it wouldn't go over very well. It wouldn't go over very well if he used that technique in churches today, because it was very radical, and he was very shocking in some of the things that he would say. I actually had Max was asking me a question. He was reading a Bible story the other day, and he asked me, he ran across something in one of the stories when Jesus was talking to the disciples, and he said something outrageous. And Max asked me, what's he mean there? And I, in my not wanting Jesus to seem too bad or like Jesus is saying something that terrible, I kind of just reworded it and put it in such a way that would make it easier for him to take. But Jesus didn't ask us to do that. Jesus said what he said. Jesus did things the way that he was going to do them. And he doesn't need us to dumb things down to make him more acceptable to everyone. He had outrageous demands. If you really can put yourself in that time period and imagine him telling you those things, or bring him into our time period and imagine him coming and standing up here and telling us the things that he told them, I would, and many of us would probably leave and walk out of here and think, can you believe he's telling us to do that? But that's what he did. He had outrageous demands. And then on multiple occasions he said, if you don't do these things that I'm telling you to do, you can't be my disciple. If you don't do the stuff that I'm telling you to do, just go. You can't be my disciple. If you look up the definition of a disciple, it says that someone who adheres to the teachings of another, it is a follower or a learner. It refers to someone who takes up the ways of someone else. If Jesus wants us to be his disciples, and wants us to go out and make more disciples the way that He made disciples. He was our teacher, and He was showing us what He wanted us to do and showing the disciples, the original disciples, what He wanted them to do. So let's read, I'm going to read a few passages here where we see Jesus's, how He approached getting new disciples. You can turn to these if you want to. The first one is in Matthew chapter 8 and verse 19. It says, "Now when Jesus saw a crowd around Him, He gave orders to depart to the other side of the sea. Then a scribe came and said to Him, 'Teacher, I will follow You wherever You go.' Jesus said to him, 'The foxes have holes and the birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay His head.'" So you've got some excited guy coming to follow Jesus. And we don't know if this guy ended up following Jesus or not. I don't think it says, but he comes up to follow Jesus, and instead of Jesus saying, "Awesome, great, come on, let's go, I'm going to give you the rundown of what we're going to do," Jesus tells them, "I don't have a consistent place that I call home, and you can follow me if you want to, but I don't have really a consistent place that I call home." Another disciple said to Him, "Lord, permit me first to go and bury my father." But Jesus said to him, "Follow me and allow the dead to bury their own dead." I think this is the verse that Max was reading the other day, and I reworded it or made it so that it was more acceptable to him because I want him to bury me. I don't want him running off. And so anyway, he says, but Jesus said to him, "Follow me and allow the dead to bury their own dead." So He's basically saying, don't worry about your dad. I don't care what's going on with your dad right now. Follow me. Matthew 9:9. As Jesus went on from there, He saw a man called Matthew sitting in the tax collector's booth, and He said to him, "Follow me." And he got up and followed Him. Then it happened as Jesus was reclining at the table in the house, behold, many tax collectors and sinners came and were dining with Jesus and His disciples. When the Pharisees saw this, they said to the disciples, "Why is your teacher eating with the tax collectors and sinners?" But when Jesus heard this, He said, "It is not those who are healthy who need a physician, but those who are sick. But go and learn what this means. I desire compassion and not sacrifice, for I did not come to call righteous but sinners." He went after Matthew, a sinner. He wasn't out looking for squeaky clean people. He went after Matthew, and he also went with Matthew and ate with Matthew's friends and Matthew's crowd. Matthew 19:16. And someone came to Him and said, "Teacher, what good thing shall I do that I may obtain eternal life?" And He said to him, "Why are you asking me what is good? There is only one who is good. But if you wish to enter into life, keep the commandments." Then He said to him, "Which ones?" And Jesus said, "You shall not commit murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness. Honor your father and mother. You shall love your neighbor as yourself." The young man said to Him, "All these things I have kept, what am I still lacking?" Jesus said to him, "If you wish to be complete, go and sell your possessions and give to the poor, and you'll have treasure in heaven, and then come follow me." But when the young man heard the statement, he went away grieving, for he was one who owned much property. Again, someone excited, coming to Jesus, wanting to follow Him, and Jesus runs down a list of things that he knows the guy is going to think that he's followed all those things, because they're things that it's pretty black and white. But then he tells him something that chases the guy away. The guy ends up walking away because of what Jesus asked him to do. He told him, sell your stuff and give the proceeds to the poor. He didn't tell him to go clean out your closets, take a few shirts to Goodwill, and then write off on your taxes. He didn't say, hold a garage sale and get rid of all the junk that you don't use down your basement, and then come follow me. He told him to go sell your possessions and give them to the poor. And then come follow me. It's pretty harsh stuff. And again, you know, we read over this stuff, but if you put yourself in that time period or bring him here and think of all the things that are important to us and imagine Jesus telling you to do something like this, and how would you respond? I think it's what Daryl was talking about last week, and we always say this. We look at the Old Testament, and we see the worshiping of idols, and we images that people made for themselves, and we think that that's just completely ridiculous. Because that's not part of our culture. It's not what we do. But you notice in all these situations when these people came to Jesus and asked him these questions, he didn't say anything like that. He didn't say, go get rid of your idol. Go get rid of that thing you worship on your nightstand. He picked stuff that he knew was relevant to that person and those people. And he picked this guy that owned a lot of stuff. And he said, you love your stuff. You love your position in life a lot more than you think you love me. So if you want to show me that you love me and want to follow me, get rid of all that stuff. Matthew 10, verse 5. I'm not going to read all this, but I'm going to... This is the part where Jesus is giving the orders to the disciples on their mission when he's sending them out. And again, if you're doing a recruiting video or recruiting thing on YouTube or whatever, or making posters, this isn't the kind of stuff that you want to put on these posters to get people to want to do what you are wanting them to do. So I'm not going to read it all. I've made a list of all the stuff that he told them to do. He said, don't take any gold, copper, or silver. Don't take a bag for your journey. Don't even take an extra shirt. Don't take extra sandals. When you go to a town, you're supposed to find lodging with strangers. So you're going to be like sheep in the middle of a bunch of wolves. You're going to be handed over to local councils. You're going to be flogged in the synagogues. You're going to be arrested. You're going to find that brother is going to betray brother. Father will betray his child. Children will rebel against parents and even have them put to death. You're going to be hated by everyone because of me. When you're persecuted in one place, you're supposed to go to another. What I tell you in the dark, you're supposed to speak in the daylight. What I whisper in your ear, you're supposed to proclaim it from the roofs. And then he says, if you disown me, I'm going to disown you. I did not come to bring peace, but I came to bring a sword. He says, anybody who loves his family more than he loves me is not worthy of me. If you don't take up your cross and follow me, you're not worthy of me. If you lose your life for my sake, you'll find it. That sounds completely exciting, doesn't it? Let's go do that. Jesus promoted losing material things. He didn't want them to be attached to the material things. He sent them without money. Didn't even want them to take a bag. They didn't have any extra clothes, didn't have any extra sandals. They didn't have money. They didn't have a credit card or money for hotels. They couldn't stay in the nice Bethlehem Inn or wherever they were going. They had to approach strangers and find a place to sleep. He promoted losing relationships. Family members will be against each other. Children are, they're going to find children will put their kids to death over this issue. And they're going to find that people are going to hate you because of me. He promoted losing freedoms. You're going to be arrested. You're going to be flogged. These people are going to arrest you and hand you over to local councils. You're going to be helpless like a sheep in the middle of animals that want to devour you. And you're going to be persecuted. And when you are persecuted, don't give up. You're supposed to just go on to the next town and look for more action. He promoted losing their lives. Take up your cross and follow me. Do activities that are going to make people want to kill you and get rid of you, the way they're going to do to me coming up here in a while. Lose your life for me and you'll find it. He also gave ultimatums. If you disown me, I will disown you. He said, you're not worthy of me if you love your family more than me. And if you don't take up your cross and follow me, you're not worthy of me. All this sound, like I said, if I put myself in this time period or put him here and have him saying this stuff to me, the first thing I have to say to myself is, what he's saying here is completely not my experience in life. I'm pretty materialistic. I don't have expensive cars or things like that, but I do have cars. I live very comfortably in this life with a lot of things that I don't actually need. Maybe if I was all in and as radical as Jesus wants me to be, then things wouldn't be as important to me. My family relationships are good. But maybe if I was all in and as radical as Jesus wanted me to be, maybe they wouldn't be. I was just thinking the other day, yesterday, as I was thinking about this, Piper had a friend come over, because I was trying to think how it's kind of hard for me to think about when my kids wanting to kill me or something over Jesus. But I was thinking the other day, Piper had a friend come over from school who's not a Christian, and she likes our family. She like wanted to come and spend time with us. We were watching a movie out in the backyard, and she wanted to come spend time with us. And I was thinking, we need to tell her about Christ. And what if I took the opportunity every time the kids brought somebody to the house that wasn't saved, and I took the time to tell them about Jesus? And I thought, what if my kids got mad at me for embarrassing them like that by talking about that every time somebody came to the house? That was the worst thing I could think of. But maybe if I was purposeful about making disciples and being as radical as Jesus was when he was here and once wanted his disciples to be, maybe things would be different. People don't, at least I don't think people hate me, but as far as non-believers go, I have good relationships with non-believers. I go to work. I touch elbows with non-believers. And if church comes up, I'll talk about it. But I'm not purposefully going out and doing things that would cause non-believers to be like, just hate me because I can't stop talking about Jesus. And I can't see myself getting in trouble with the authorities over Christ. We live, again, we just the country we live in, the freedoms we have, and then, you know, we'll always say, yeah, but our freedoms are being taken away from us, and they are. But I could probably very quickly go out and get in trouble with the authorities over Jesus if I really wanted to. But I know where I'm supposed to do things. I know how I'm supposed to do things. But maybe if I was as radical as I was supposed to think, as I was supposed to be, then things would be different. I guess as I was looking through this, Jesus wants, the overall theme behind this is that Jesus wants absolutely nothing to take his place. Jesus wants absolutely nothing. And we can't try to make it okay with all the things that we do and try to dumb it down and make it all work together. Jesus wants nothing to take his place and nothing to interfere with his place in your life. Now, you may have seen this illustration before. Well, I don't think you've ever seen this illustration because I made it up. But you may have seen the illustration with a glass jar and rocks and pebbles and sand and water before. I've seen the illustration before where somebody takes several big rocks and says, this is God, and he puts it in the jar. And he says, this is family, he puts it in the jar. And then takes another medium-sized rock and says, it's another important thing, and puts it in the jar. And then he takes a bunch of little pebbles and he says, these are the small things in life, and he puts them in the jar. And then he takes some sand and he puts it all in the jar, and the sand represents something. Anyway, you get all the stuff in the jar if you do it in the proper order. In other words, God's the big rock and he goes in the jar first. But if you put the sand and the pebbles and the small stuff in first, you're not going to be able to put the big rock in, because it all has to be done in a certain order. So I've taken that illustration and made my own. So, in my illustration, Jesus is the sand, and the jar is our life. And based on what I've been reading and learning about being a disciple, Jesus, in his multiple times meeting with people, he told them, get rid of this. Don't do this. You can't have this in your life. You have to have me be number one. So, I know this is second place, and it's not mine. But one of the things that's important to us in our culture are educational achievements. Our education and the degree that you have, what is it? It's the foundation for what? Being financially successful. It's pretty important to us, our educational achievements. All right, so I had a hard time finding a family member. Ozzie Smith is a representation of family. Family is very important to me, and it's important to all of us. Our stuff, our cars, not just cars, but just all the stuff that we have. It's all part of our life. Our wallet represents our jobs, the things that we do that bring money in and make us be able to have all this other stuff, and it provides security to it for us. Our 401k, the money that you have saved the thousands of dollars that you have saved sitting there to take care of you and protect you and provide security for the 15, 20 years that you're not going to be working. Leisure time. Then this last one is a little military guy, but our country and our freedoms and all these things. All these things are really important to us. And we hold them in a very high place. But according to what I see when I read the Bible, when Jesus is asking for his disciples and asking for people to follow him, and he says, lose your life. He says, sell your possessions, give to the poor. He doesn't want anything to take his place. Because it ends up overrunning things and taking the place of him. Jesus wants to be everything to us. He wants to be our life, and he wants nothing else to take his place and take the place that he's supposed to be in. And lastly, so we have the example of the disciples and all the things that he told them, but then we come to Paul, and his loss of things was more along the lines of what we would be concerned about. And he says, if anyone has a mind to put confidence in the flesh, I far more, circumcised the eighth day of the nation of Israel, of the tribe of Benjamin, a Hebrew of Hebrews, as to the law a Pharisee, as to zeal a persecutor of the church, as to the righteousness which is in the law found blameless. But whatever things were gained to me, those things I have counted as loss, for the sake of Christ. More than that, I count all things to be lost in view of the surpassing value of knowing Christ Jesus my Lord, for whom I have suffered the loss of all things and count them as rubbish so that I may gain Christ. All right, let's close in word of prayer. Father, we thank you for your word, that we have a record of how you interacted, how your son interacted with his disciples when he was here on earth. We thank you for the example that we have in Scripture of the people that did follow Jesus and actually said, Jesus, we have followed you and have given up everything to follow you. And then the examples of those that looked at him and said, no thanks. I'm going to go my own way because I can't give all this up. We thank you for that record, that we can look at that, and we ask that you would help us to evaluate our lives and if we are doing what Jesus has asked us to do. And we ask these things in Jesus' name. Amen.